AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
In the early 6th century BCE, on the rocky island of Syros in the Cyclades, far from the philosophical ferment of Ionia, and even further from the great Greek cities of Italy and Sicily, there lived a strange, quiet, solitary thinker whose influence would ripple outward in ways neither he nor his contemporaries could have fully imagined. Pherecydes, sometimes written Pherecydes, occupies an unusual position in the history of philosophy. He stands between myth and reason, between poetic cosmogony and speculative argument, between epic storytelling and metaphysical system building. He predates Pythagoras, overlaps with Thales and Anaximander, and is sometimes named as the teacher of Pythagoras himself. But his thought is neither purely mythic like Hesiod, nor purely naturalistic like the Milesians. Instead, Pherecydes creates something in between, the first Greek prose cosmology, a bold attempt to tell the story of the universe with gods who are not quite humanized and yet not quite abstract principles either. His work is fragmentary, enigmatic, and difficult to classify, but it represents a moment when Greek thinking was learning to transform myth into metaphysics. Imagine him on Syros, an island of rugged hills, sparse vegetation, and scattered settlements built into the landscape, where the sea glows bright under the Mediterranean sun and the winds carry stories from nearby islands. Pherecydes was not a wandering rhapsode like Xenophanes, nor a civic scientist like Thales, nor the founder of a disciplined community like Pythagoras. He appears instead as a solitary figure, a scholar with a scroll, writing somewhere at the edge of the Greek world, drawing from older traditions, Near Eastern, Orphic, Hesiodic, and shaping them into something new. His main work, known as the Pentamikos, or sometimes Heptamikos, meaning the Book of the Five or Seven Recesses, survives only in fragments, but even in those scraps, we glimpse an extraordinary attempt to fuse mythic narrative with rational structure. Pherecydes begins his cosmogony not with chaos, as Hesiod did, nor with water, as Thales proposed, nor with the indefinite Apeiron, like Anaximander. Instead, he posits three eternal beings, Zas, a form of Zeus, Chthone, the earth goddess, and Kronos, time. They do not come into being, they simply are. Already this marks a break from Hesiod, for whom the gods have genealogies and births. In Pherecydes, the divine is primordial and ungenerated. Time exists before all else, not as a deity with a human form, but as an ordering principle. This is not the Kronos of later myth, the father of Zeus who devours his children, but a more abstract figure, time as a creative force, the engine of cosmic differentiation. Kronos, in Pherecydes' scheme, produces the seeds of all things and places them in the mycoi, the five or seven recesses of the cosmic structure, where they germinate before emerging into the world. Everything about this is new for Greek thought. The idea that the universe begins with ungenerated entities that exist eternally, that time, rather than a story of succession or violent overthrow, initiates the unfolding of the cosmos, that the origins of things lie in hidden recesses within primordial being. This is a fusion of mythic imagery with metaphysical reasoning. Pherecydes is not abandoning myth, he is transforming it. His gods do not correspond easily to the anthropomorphic figures of Olympus. Zas, though related to Zeus, is presented as a cosmic intelligence who crafts the world rather than ruling it through thunderbolt and decree. Chthone is not simply the Earth Mother Gaia. She becomes Earth only after receiving a gift, a robe embroidered by Zas, which symbolizes the making of the world's surface. Kronos is not an old man with a sickle. He is the timeless principle out of which structure arises. Scholars sometimes call Pherecydes the first theologian, others the first metaphysician, and still others the first prose author in Greek history. Each title captures something true. Unlike Hesiod's Theogony, which is a poem meant for recitation, Pherecydes' Pentameikos is written in continuous prose, probably intended for reading rather than performance. That shift from verse to prose marks an intellectual transition. Poetry invokes memory, tradition, and divine inspiration. Prose suggests analysis, explanation, and argument. And yet Pherecydes does not simply abandon mythic form. He tells stories about marriages of cosmic beings, about the weaving of the world, about battles between gods. But these stories are not mere entertainment. They encode speculative ideas about the nature of reality. To understand the importance of Pherecydes, imagine Greek thought at that moment. The Milesians are beginning to ask what the world is made of. Thales says water. Anaximander, pushing the idea further, says the Aperon, the indefinite. Anaximenes says air, rarefied and condensed. Meanwhile, the poets continue to tell of gods intervening in human affairs, shaping destinies. Fighting, loving, deceiving. Pherecydes stands between these impulses. He wants to explain the structure of the cosmos with something more systematic than myth. But he also wants to preserve the imaginative richness that myth provides. His gods represent principles rather than personalities. Zas is not just a sovereign god. He is the mind or spirit that shapes form. Chthone is not a goddess with a narrative trajectory. She is primordial matter, the receiving aspect of being. Kronos is not a patriarch. He is time as the generating matrix. The centerpiece of his cosmogony is the marriage of Zas and Chthone. But this marriage, unlike marriages in Homer or Hesiod, is symbolic. Zas, the ordering principle, gives Chthone a robe embroidered with the earth's surface, mountains, rivers, plains. By accepting this gift, Chthone becomes gay, the earth as we know it. The world emerges not from violent succession, castration, or generational overthrow, as in older myths, but from a harmonious union of form and matter. The robe is not just a bridal garment, it is the world pattern. Here, Pherecydes anticipates later metaphysical language. Form imposes structure on matter. Mind shapes body. Order emerges from union. His imagery is mythological, but the idea beneath it is philosophical. Pherecydes introduces another innovation, a cosmic battle between gods and serpentine forces, sometimes called Ophion or the Ophionians. This battle resembles, in outline, the Titanomachy or the Gigantomachy, but Pherecydes' version has a different flavor. It is not about familial revenge or the overthrow of tyrannical gods. It is about the victory of ordered principles over chaotic or primal forces. The serpents represent pre-order, undifferentiated being, the threat of disintegration. Zas and Kronos do not merely defeat them. They establish the conditions for a stable cosmos. In this sense, Pherecydes prefigures later philosophical themes. Order versus chaos. Logos versus disorder. Form versus the formless. Imagine him writing, perhaps sitting in a stone dwelling overlooking the sea, his scroll unrolled before him. he would have heard stories from travelers of Babylonian cosmologies in which primordial waters are divided by divine conflict, of Phoenician myths involving cosmic eggs and serpents, of Orphic traditions that speak of time and necessity and the cosmic egg from which Phanes emerges. Pharisides' ideas echo some of these themes, but he reshapes them with a distinctly Greek sensibility. He does not tell of gods creating the world through violence, but through weaving, structure, and union. He does not reject myth. He refines it into something more philosophical. His influence on Pythagoras is a matter of debate, but ancient sources repeatedly link them. Some say Pythagoras studied under Pharisees. Others claim Pharisees taught doctrines about the immortality of the soul that Pythagoras later elaborated. There is evidence that Pharisees believed the soul was immortal and that human beings undergo cycles of rebirth. This belief puts him at the threshold of what will become a central doctrine in Pythagoreanism and later in Orphic and Platonic thought, that the soul is not extinguished at death, but continues its journey, refining itself, learning, perhaps rising or falling depending on its life. Pharisees' idea of the soul is not as elaborated as Pythagoras's, but the seed is present. The soul is something divine, connected to the cosmic order and not bound to one body. In one fragment, he speaks of sleeves or pouches, mycoi, where the principles of things are placed. The mycos is a recess, a hidden chamber, a womb-like cavity in which seeds develop. This imagery might at first seem primitive, but it maps onto a sophisticated conceptual scheme. The recesses represent fundamental categories of being, the primordial structures within which all differentiation occurs. Chronos deposits the seeds of gods and of the cosmos into these recesses, and they later emerge into their distinct forms. This prefigures later philosophical ideas. In Plato, the receptacle of the Timaeus. In Aristotle, the matter that receives form. In Stoic cosmology, the cycles of cosmic development. Pharisees' recesses are mythic images for structural realities. Pharisees also innovates by introducing the idea of divine attributes expressed spatially rather than genealogically. His gods occupy layers or dimensions of the cosmos, not family trees. They are co-eternal, not born from one another. This breaks sharply with Hesiod and signals a transition from mythic ancestry to metaphysical coexistence. It is a small shift, but it changes everything. Instead of asking, which god came first? Who fathered whom? We begin to ask, what principles coexist eternally? How do they interact to produce the world? This question is no longer mythological, it is metaphysical. To appreciate Pharisees' originality, picture the intellectual world around him. Hesiod provides genealogies of gods, telling how the universe arose from chaos, how Gaia bore Uranus, how Titans and Olympians fought. These stories appeal to human imagination. They provide divine models, moral lessons, and explanations in narrative form. Meanwhile, the Milesians provide naturalistic models. The world is water, or the indefinite, or air. They speak of processes, not gods, of physical transformations, not divine marriages. Pharisees stands between these. He sees the value of narrative, but wants to infuse it with conceptual depth. He sees the need for structure, but recognizes that abstract principles alone may fail to capture the world's richness. Thus, he creates a hybrid genre, myth with system, theology with metaphysics, narrative with ontology. His work may seem obscure to us now because it lacks the clarity of later philosophical abstraction and retains the imagery of myth. But in the 6th century BCE, it would have been breathtaking. He was doing something no one else was doing. Making myth rational without making it dry. Making theology rigorous without stripping it of its imaginative force. In Pharisees' vision, Zeus, Kronos, and Chthoni form a trinity of eternal realities. Kronos generates seeds. Zeus organizes. Chthoni receives. This triad resembles, in a distant way, later metaphysical triads. The one, intellect and soul in Neoplatonism. The father, logos and spirit in early Christian thought. The Brahman, Atman, Prakriti triad in Indian philosophy. This is not to say Pharisees influences these directly, but his way of thinking, three principles, eternal, interacting to shape the cosmos, belongs to a broad pattern of philosophical speculation that appears across cultures, a unity at the top, a shaping principle, and a receiving or material principle. Pharisee's version is still mythic, still draped in divine names, but the structure is unmistakably philosophical. One of the most intriguing aspects of his work is his treatment of time. Chronos does not simply measure events. He is a creative force. Time generates, distributes, organizes. This idea anticipates not only later mythic figures like Aeon and Chronos in Orphic writings, but also philosophical conceptions of time as an ontological principle. In Plato's Timaeus, time is the moving image of eternity. In Aristotle, time is the measure of motion. In Stoicism, time is a mode of cosmic fire. Pharisees is the first Greek thinker we know who places time itself at the heart of cosmic generation. His Chronos is not just a character, it is a metaphysical necessity. Imagine Pharisees writing about Chronos in prose rather than verse. He is not invoking a god in prayer. He is reasoning about the conditions for cosmic order. Time, he sees, cannot be a derivative phenomenon. It must be primordial. Without time, there is no sequence, no development, no emergence. If the world is not simply static but unfolds, time must precede and contain that unfolding. So he personifies this insight in Chronos, but the personification is a philosophical tool, not a literal picture. Chronos is a being, yes, but not in the Homeric sense. He is time as the artisan of becoming. Pharisees also explores the idea of cosmic cycles, though not as fully developed as later Stoic ekpyrosis or Orphic cosmic eggs. His fragments suggest that the world undergoes phases of development and renewal. Chronos generates seeds that unfold into the world. The world unfolds into multiplicity. Perhaps it later returns to a primordial condition. This theme, lightly sketched, anticipates one of the deepest motifs in Greek philosophy, the idea that the cosmos lives through cycles, that creation is not a one-time event, but an ongoing rhythmic process. His prose style, insofar as we can reconstruct it, was spare, dense, and obscure. Later writers found him difficult, even cryptic, but this difficulty is not a flaw. It is a consequence of pioneering. Ought. He lacked the vocabulary later philosophers would develop. Form, matter, substance, essence, being, becoming. He had to express metaphysical insight through mythic language, and the result is a hybrid unlike anything before or since. His work reads like the moment when myth begins to strain under the weight of rational reflection, when story begins to turn into system. Picture him again on Syros, standing near the sea, watching the changing colors of the water as the sun sets. He sees the rhythms of nature, the cycles of seasons, the play of elements. He hears sailors speak of storms and calm, of stars guiding their routes. He hears traveling bards reciting tales of gods in conflict, of heroes and monsters. All these influences converge in his mind, and he shapes them into something new, a story about the cosmos that does not rely on divine caprice, that does not treat gods as exaggerated humans, but that also does not discard the narrative imagination that gives meaning to human life. Pharisee's world is not governed by the tempers of Zeus or the passions of Hera. It is structured by eternal realities, time, order, matter, figured as divine beings but functioning as metaphysical principles. Zeus is the structuring intelligence, Chronos, the generating time, Chthone, the receptive ground. Their marriage symbolizes the union of form and matter. Their conflict with serpentine forces symbolizes the triumph of order over primordial chaos. Their gifts, garments, and unions symbolize the emergence of the world as we know it. In one fragment, Zeus builds a winged oak or a cosmic tree around which the world is structured. This image of a world tree, a cosmic axis, is common in Near Eastern and Indo-European myth. But in Pharisees, it becomes a philosophical symbol. The axis of the cosmos, the structure around which space is organized. The oak is not merely a tree, it is the world's skeleton. Again, we see the blending of inherited mythic patterns with emerging metaphysical explanation. Pharisides also innovates in his treatment of divinity as neither wholly transcendent nor wholly immanent. His gods are part of the cosmos, not outside it. They are eternal principles that shape reality from within. This anticipates the Stoic idea of God as the rational fire pervading the cosmos. It also anticipates Neoplatonic ideas of emanation. Pharisides is not yet a philosopher in the technical sense, but he is thinking along lines philosophers will later follow. When we look back at early Greek thought, we often tell the story as a progression from myth to science, from Hesiod to the Milesians, from mythology to naturalism. But Pharisides complicates that story. He shows that the path was not linear. Greek thought did not abandon myth overnight. Instead, thinkers like Pharisides transformed it from within, using mythic vocabulary to express ideas that reached beyond the mythic imagination. He is a reminder that intellectual evolution is not a simple march toward abstraction. It is a process of adaptation, translation, and fusion. In presenting Pharisides to a modern listener, you can emphasize this transitional character. He is not as cleanly naturalistic as Thales or as boldly abstract as Anaximander. He is not as mystical as Pythagoras or as critical as Xenophanes. He sits in a unique space, taking old stories and asking new questions of them. His gods are not characters, they are principles. His stories are not theological dogma. They are models for understanding how reality unfolds. His metaphors are not decorative. They are conceptual tools. And yet he remains deeply human. His imagery is sensual and vivid. Robes embroidered with Earth's landscapes, winged oaks, serpents warring against gods, seeds placed in womb-like chambers. These images speak to something in us that pure abstraction cannot reach. Pharisides recognizes that human beings understand through story, symbol, and metaphor. He does not discard the imaginative dimension of myth. He refines it into a vehicle for deeper thinking. His influence reaches beyond the fragments of his own work. Pythagoras may have learned from him the idea of the soul's immortality and transmigration. Plato may have encountered echoes of his triadic structure and metaphoric cosmology. Orphic and Pythagorean writers may have drawn from his imagery of time as the father of seeds. Later historians classify him as one of the first theologians because he reimagines the gods in a rational form. Others call him the first metaphysician because he posits eternal principles interacting to generate the world. Still others call him the first Greek prose author because his writing marks the transition from verse to conceptual exposition. All these titles tell a piece of the truth, but the deeper truth is that Pharisides represents a moment of intellectual courage and creativity. He stands at the threshold of philosophy, reaching into the familiar stories of his culture and drawing out their hidden structures. He looks at myth and sees not merely entertainment, but a symbolic language capable of expressing the architecture of reality. He looks at the cosmos and sees not only gods and monsters, but principles, interactions, and systems. If we imagine him in the last years of his life, perhaps still on Syros, perhaps traveling to other islands, still writing, still teaching, we can see a figure both humble and profound. He had no school, no disciples in the formal sense, no city honoring him with statues, no students recording his lectures. But he carried with him something more enduring, a new way of speaking about the world, one that would open the door to philosophy without closing the door to imagination. His final legacy is a vision of the cosmos as a living, ordered, unfolding structure shaped by eternal principles whose names are gods but whose natures are metaphysical. Zeus, the ordering mind, Chthone, the receptive ground, Kronos, the generating time. Their interactions form the world, adorn it, shape it, sustain it. Their stories are not literal histories, but symbolic maps of reality. For a modern listener, Pharisides offers a lesson in the creative fusion that lies at the beginning of philosophy. He reminds us that the boundary between myth and reason is not a sharp line, but a zone of transformation. He reminds us that new ideas often emerge not by rejecting old symbols, but by reinterpreting them. And he reminds us that the earliest attempts to understand the cosmos were not cold inquiries, but passionate acts of imagination aimed at grasping something larger than human experience. His work may be obscure now, preserved only in scattered fragments quoted by later authors. But through those fragments shines a mind experimenting with the deepest questions. Where does the universe come from? What principles shape it? How do order and time give rise to form? What is the soul, and how does it relate to the greater cosmos? The answers he offers are mythic, yes, but also foundational. They mark the moment when the Greek mind began to turn from story to system, from genealogy to principle, from divine personalities to cosmic structures. Pherecydes stands at the dawn of that turn. His voice is quiet compared to the later thunder of Plato, Aristotle, and the Stoics. But without his step onto that bridge between myth and philosophy, the path might have been very different.
Midnight rails under silver moon, dusty boots on a winding road. A shadow's the only friend I've known since she packed up and let me go. Empty whiskey bottle on the sea, her laugh still echoes in my bones. Saddle's heavy with memories. I ride alone where the wind still blows. Nowhere else to be. Nowhere else to be. Nowhere else to be. The horizon gold, but it don't warm a lonesome soul. Every town I pass feels half her size. Every trail's haunted by goodbye. I whisper prayers to open skies, hoping someday my heart'll find a brand new path beyond the pain, where broken hearts can heal in time. Nowhere else to be. Nowhere else to be. Nowhere else to be. Nowhere else to be.
Mm-hmm.